brought to you by Black Knight. It's the technology.ie podcast, episode 44 for September 26th, 2012, with Michaela Nealon and Conor Muinichon. Dias Mariva Gaskit Faltrovishtach. Hello and welcome to technology.ie, the podcast brought to you by Black Knight. This is Conor Muinichon in the Edgecast Media Studios. And at his home in Carlow, he's back. It's Michaela Nealon, Managing Director of Black Knight Solutions in Carlow. Hello, Michaela.
How's it going, Con?
Welcome back. We missed you. Where were you?
I was off gallivanting.
You were. We missed 2 weeks of the podcast. We thought we might get together, but time zones and socialising and conferencing got in the way. You were at two events.
Yeah, I was away for the last nearly 2 weeks in Montenegro. There were two events on. And there was a few days gap between the events, but it wasn't worth my while to trek all the way back from Montenegro and then head back out again. So I thought I'd just stay out there and work remotely from there for a few days. So the first event I was at was run by the .ru domain registry, and it was their annual meeting where they bring together registrars and registries dealing with stuff to do with domains and the internet industry in Central and Eastern Europe. So that was kind of, it was interesting, a bit heavy going in parts, but very, very interesting. And the second event, which finished officially on Friday, but realistically finished on Saturday afternoon, was WebFest, which I was at last year as well, which is run by a number of companies in Montenegro and Serbia, and brings together a lot of the cool startups and tech types from all over the Balkans.
And both of those events, as you said, held in Budva, Montenegro. I presume a lot of other people were like yourself, Michaela, and took in both conferences.
Well, actually, no, they didn't. Apart from the guys from .me who were hosting both events and, you know, sponsoring both events and things like that, I was the only person who was at both the .ru shindig and the WebFest one. Everybody else came for one, and that was it.
I'm admiring your photographs. You posted a few things on Flickr, Michaela. Lots of lovely people, lots of sunshine, nice weather.
The weather was glorious, glorious, absolutely glorious. I mean, there were a few days of biblical rain, but beyond those few days, they hadn't had rain for, I don't know, 3 or 4 months. So I think it was trying to catch up or something. This was absolutely, it was incredible. The place was practically flooded for a couple of days.
But other than that, a nice time. You have a really tough job, Michaela. I must say, I'm impressed at your stamina and staying power. But well done. It looks good, as I say. And very, very good indeed. Anything interesting discussed? Anything come up?
Well, the .ru thing was, you know, it was a lot of stuff to do with, you know, internet policy and, you know, various things that some of the domain registries are doing and thinking of doing and, you know, a lot of that stuff. I mean, there's, you know, some interesting topics. And, you know, again, as you find so many times when you're in these kind of, at these kind of events, the issues we have in Ireland, they're not unique. You know, the issues that everybody faces in terms of internet governance, copyright, governments getting involved, all that kind of thing. I mean, these are pressing issues for the entire internet industry as a whole. So some very interesting discussions and, you know, some interesting initiatives, like the guys from .ru have been having issues over the last couple of years with a lot of abuse in that area of the world. And they've been working with several companies to look and actually analyze what's happening in terms of what kind of abuse is going on and how many domain names are involved and all that kind of thing. So they're making progress there. The WebFest event was incredibly refreshing and invigorating. Some very, very interesting companies were at it. I mean, you'd have some fantastic speakers. Ryan Freitas, who's one of the founders of About.me. You'd Opera's CTO, whose name I can't quite pronounce. Brian Wong from over from San Francisco, another interesting character. Startup Chile had Carolina Rossi there. I mean, she's absolutely fascinating. The Chilean government are giving entrepreneurs a wad of cash if they go and set up in Chile, which is very interesting. SEO Moz's Ruth Burr, she's their lead SEO internally in-house. She gave a very interesting talk about, you know, what's going on with SEO and everything else. Heidi Harmon from Geek Girl Meetup, another interesting one. And, I mean, there's a load of other people. I mean, go on and on. I could harp on about how wonderful that event was for hours, Con, but let's not do that.
Fair enough. Interestingly enough, I think it's been a busy and an interesting couple of weeks in terms of tech news in Ireland. And, of course, having missed 2 weeks, we have a packed agenda on the show tonight. We're going to talk about a load of stuff. KildareStreet.com is in the news. We're going to talk about Kickstarter. The Apple iPhone 5 is released. We're going to talk about lots of other things as well on the show tonight as well. But let's start with the events that are coming up, Michele, and the Irish Web Awards are coming up. We talked about it recently. We had Damien Mully on recently, and it looks like it's a record-breaking Irish Web Awards in terms of the numbers of submissions that have been received.
Yeah, I mean, the figures that Damien published there the other day were mind-blowing, absolutely mind-blowing.
Blow my mind, so. Go on, let's hear it.
He put out a press release. I mean, I posted something about, you know, the nominations list being out, and I had missed the press release that he'd sent us earlier in the day, between one thing and another. 900 websites were nominated. 900.
That's a lot of work. That's a lot of work for judges.
But it's not just that, though. It's like the fact that there are 900 websites actually up for these awards. That's impressive.
Now, you can nominate yourself, I presume, can't you?
Oh, of course you can, yeah.
But you're not going to do that unless you have a feel that you're in some way in contention or at least have a chance of making a shortlist. And it certainly is it's a good sign, isn't it, Michele, for the diversity and the general health of the web sector in Ireland?
Oh, definitely. I mean, this is the kind of thing. I mean, like, you know, coming back from Montenegro where, you know, you're seeing a lot of these entrepreneurs doing things and trying to do things and, you know, dealing with a lot of challenges, and you can't, and, you know, that's so vibrant. And then at the same time in Ireland we have this other vibrant community that's also trying to do interesting things with the web and the internet in general. It's great. I mean, there's so much energy out there.
There absolutely is. And it's interesting as well, as you've blogged on technology.ie, it's clashing with, well, they're heading for a showdown really the Aircom Spider Awards are on the same night. And indeed, a lot of people are nominated for similar categories in both.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the thing. I mean, this, you know, there's a cut, it's the award season. You get one after another after another. It'll be an interesting one to see. I mean, there's going to be people who would probably have gone to both events if they were on separate nights. Mm. But going to both of them now is going to be a bit of a challenge.
It's kind of head to head.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, let's say if you were shortlisted for both awards, which one would you actually turn up for?
That is a very good question. Damien's, the Irish Web Awards are on in the Mansion House. Where are the Aircom Spiders on? Do we know that?
Good question. Let me just double check that. Probably somewhere fancy. Oh, yeah, the Convention Centre.
Okay, so they're a bit of a distance apart, really, aren't they? The other side of the river, isn't it? Convention Centre, is it on the... Convention Centre is on the other side, isn't it, Tiz? I think it is.
Well, they're not miles and miles and miles away, because, I mean, Dublin isn't exactly the largest city in the world.
You do it in a few minutes in a taxi.
Depending on the traffic, but still, I mean, you know, let's say you settle in for a nice evening. I mean, okay, it's a different kind of atmosphere. It's a different setup entirely.
It is, yeah.
But at the same time, you know, I'm terribly boring. I mean, I have an awful habit of, you know, I settle myself into one place for the evening and that's it. I won't move. I won't budge.
So which are you going to?
I'd be going to Damien's Awards. Mm.
To the Irish Web Awards.
Oh, God. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't. I've no interest in going to the other ones at all, really. I mean, I've said plenty about them in the past.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe things will improve there. I mean, they have done quite a bit, I think, in terms of you know, their judges and all that kind of thing. But at the same time, I still personally have issues with the way that they're expected, that they're, you know, they're charging so much for people to enter it. I think that that actually, you know, it reduces the likelihood of you seeing some of the more interesting sites and things going in there, because a lot of people, yeah, they don't have the money to be throwing.
It's more of a corporate event then, as a result, because as you say, because people have to charge, because people have to pay to enter. It really does rule out your small startup and your independent kind of website.
Oh, totally, totally. Yeah. I mean, they you know, what they've tried to do, I think, over the last couple of years is they've introduced excuse me, they've introduced these a couple of categories where the entrance is free, but at the same time, I mean, you know, it's not as if they don't have sponsors for the event, and it's not as if they don't have you know, they're not as if they're not charging enough money for people to actually go along on the evening.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I think, you know, that it's, you know, if you're running an event that the industry really respects and everything else, people are going to talk about it. They're going to give it column inches. They're going to blog about it. They're going to tweet about it. All that kind of thing. And you know, Mully's event, he runs it on a cost recovery basis. I mean, sure, he makes money from it, but it's not like he's going to live off it for the rest of the year.
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, I just think it's that the kind of the more grassrootsy type setup of the Web Awards is more interesting from my perspective anyway.
Speaking of startups and new things, I've added something, we'll talk about it later in the programme, but there's a startup and a non-profit thing that's in Ireland which is kind of close to my heart, something called Mission V, which you may know James Corbett, Aerapreneur on Twitter, is involved with, and I'm just adding it in because later we're going to talk about Kickstarter and we're going to talk about some interesting projects and that and some news that they've announced, but also Mission V have launched a funded programme for their virtual worlds technology for a pilot project, the next phase of their project, which is going to involve 38 schools in Ireland. And I'm just saying it as I think of it. We'll talk about it in part two of the show. I also want to talk, Michele, about coming closer to home and events as well. Well, closer to home for me and closer to your spiritual home, I imagine, as well, to Skynet in UL. Are you a Skynet alumnus, Michele?
Not quite. It's a little bit different. I was never a member of Skynet.
Right.
As a student in UL.
But it was in UL as a student, yeah, that you got interested in computers, wasn't it?
Give me a second. I'll explain it all to you.
Do.
I was in UL around the time that Skynet was started up.
Okay.
I wasn't a member. I knew quite a few of the people who were involved, but I was in a totally different area. Oddly enough, though, now I am actually a member, even though...
Oh, right.
I now have membership for a number of bizarre reasons. And we were involved with the first SkyCon a few years back. And I actually spoke at it. Mm. This year, they're running SkyCon. It's in a couple of weeks' time.
It's the fifth or sixth SkyCon, and it's the 20th anniversary this year of Skynet.
Yes. And what's interesting is that they've got a couple... Well, it's interesting that they're doing this, but what's cool is they've got Randall Munro, who's the guy behind XKCD, is coming over to speak.
Which is a fantastic web comic. And a guy with a really sort of an interesting outlook on life.
Oh, totally. I mean, it's if you actually, you know, the XKCD has some of the best. I mean, they're memes in their own right. I mean, there are some of those comics are absolutely brilliant. Also speaking will be Mark Shuttleworth, who's the guy behind Ubuntu.
That's right.
The open source Linux distro that's more kind of user friendly as opposed to being geek friendly. Mm. And there's a load of other speakers from companies like Red Hat, SAP, IBM. But the thing is, it's being held in UL. It's only €25 for the entire weekend. Mm-hmm. So I think it's an interesting event. It's and it's good value, and it's not expensive.
You know, I'm tempted to go, Michele. I'm not great for going to events, but this is literally on my doorstep. Well, close to my doorstep.
You should go take a microphone, shove it under Randall Munro's nose, you know?
Well, I'm interested from the point... I'm interested, for all those kinds of reasons. And but the fact... Exactly, the notion... Because this lineup is pretty impressive, as you say. The companies that are represented, the speakers that are represented... there's a guy called Tim Bunce in there that a lot of people might not know, but I happen to know that he lives in County Clare, and I did interview him once. But if you're in peril circles, he's a guy who's well known and well respected in terms of his work in scripting in peril. Who else is on this? Probably nobody else that jumps out at me. But the opportunity again, I would go certainly. Mark Shuttleworth and Randall Munro of XKTCD are both billed as keynote speakers. I would definitely go to hear them. And there's bios and there's more information on all of the speakers at that. It's an impressive event. And Michele, as I say, you go to events around the world, and some of them are interesting and some of them are perhaps more work for you. But definitely, this is something I'm very interested in, that it's here on the doorstep. What's the date of it?
It's the 5th and 6th of October.
No, 6th and 7th, actually, looking at
sorry,
it.
Yeah, sorry,
very close.
That was close.
Yeah, 6th and 7th of October, which is the end of next week, in fact. And running from 10 to 5 each day, as you say, on the doorstep in Limerick. The first talk on the Saturday is Mark Shuttleworth starting at 11 a.m. Yeah, I'm definitely interested in that. And well done to Skynet and to Laura Tchaikovsky, isn't it, that was in touch with us as well make sure that we remember to talk about that. What else are we going to talk about? In facta, not just a catchphrase. Also, an email marketing software business based in Sligo. Wasn't that the catchphrase of the Bertie character years ago on Gift Grub? Do you remember that?
I don't know about Gift Grub, but never mind.
I wonder, is that where they got their name?
I don't know.
Interesting. Anyway,
they've been around for years. Mm. They've had email marketing software for Windows for as long as I can remember, the bit of software that you might have heard of called Groupmail. And Groupmail, very nice product, works very, very well. But the problem, of course, is it was Windows only. Mm-hmm. And, you could kind of bludgeon it into working on a Mac by doing all sorts of crazy things involving using, say, Parallels Desktop or something else. But they didn't have a native OS X version, but now they have. It's called Hooli. It's available for OS X. It's not expensive. It's only €31, and it's easy. It's simple to use. It's a small little download. I mean, I think it's only a few megabytes. And it's not one of these great big whoppers of gigabytes of download, and they've got some interesting plans about how they're going to make it work in the future. Because
is it all on the client side, Michele? Is it something that that works exclusively on if you install it on a Mac, is everything there, or does it work with some kind of server based or cloud based element as well?
At the moment, it's all on your machine.
Okay.
I mean, sure, you'd be sending stuff out through a mail server somewhere, and I suppose if you're doing larger volumes, you'd want to look at doing something a little bit you'd want to look at something a bit more robust.
Yeah.
But it's what's good about it is it's OS X. It works. It's available in the App Store at the moment. It works directly with your Mac's address book. And I've been in touch with them, and we've been doing a bit of backwards and forwards on it and some of the features. Mm-hmm. It's like they'll probably add other features and change the way it does things to bring it more in line, I'd say, with some of the features in the Windows version. But the fact that they actually have a Mac version for me is, you know, it's great. I'm very happy to see that.
Very good. And it's a creative use of a .ie domain name as well. Hooli is the name of the product, and you can find out more about it at hool.ie. And it's from Infacta, and we wish them the very best of luck with that. Another thing we've been talking about recently on technology.ie. Well, it's been a while, actually, since we talked about .XXX. We were kind of blue in the face, if you pardon the expression, blue in the face from it there for a while. What's that you've blogged this week? XXX rated porn search engine to launch this week, Michele.
Yeah. I was trying to come up with an inflammatory a post title as possible.
Yeah. I thought there was a porn search engine. Isn't it called Google or...?
several. Now this is an interesting one, because one of the things that I think we touched on a bit when we were talking about .XXX in the past is that ICM, the guys behind XXX, were trying to offer other services to add value to the domain name.
Mm-hmm.
So if you remember, we talked to Paul and MetaCert about, you know, the scanning, and there's the McAfee scans, and there's all sorts of other things, and the labeling and all these other features.
Mm.
And so what they're now doing is it'll be launched on Thursday. It's search.XXX. Nice, simple, straightforward, easy to remember domain. And it will only list developed .XXX websites.
Okay.
And they've put up information on the site as well about how to get your site indexed. And things that, you know, if you don't want your site indexed, and, you know, what kind, if, you know, say, for example, if you're using a .XXX with a .com or with a .co or whatever, how to make sure that if you want it indexed, that it will be, and everything else. I mean, it's going to be a not safe for work search engine.
I can see that. Yeah, you've said that in the blog post. You can expect this to be 100% not safe for work. But Michele, can I ask you? Okay, I understand what you're talking about here, and that they are, as you say, trying to add value to this in terms of the fact that .XXX is supposed to be regulated, it's supposed to be policed, it's supposed to be a better quality experience. If you go to a site like that, you can assume that your experience is going to be somewhat reputable, that there are certain standards that have been applied, such as we discussed, the MetaCert certification that Paul Walsh's company is involved with. So that you know, for example, that this is a site which is blocked by the MetaCert system and the MetaCert database, and that's one of the things that they're offering. But, you know, and then this is the latest value add thing. So if you want to have a site in this area in .XXX, you're going to be indexed and accessible through this search.XXX site. Is it working for them, Michele? I mean, have they had the uptake that they wanted on domains? Has the adult industry seen the value in being in this regulated and policed and regulated area, or is it still a wild west of adult content out there, and are people bypassing .XXX?
Well, there's a couple of things I can say on that. I mean, first off, it's a bit early to say, because, you know, they haven't had a full year yet, and, you know, any new domain that launches, you'll have that initial kind of, oh, look, something shiny, something new. Doesn't matter what the extension is, you know, but people go off and they'll register domains in it. And some of them will be developed and some will sit on the shelf gathering dust almost. And there was so much controversy around .XXX prior to the launch and then during the launch, and, you know, court cases and all sorts of other interesting legal battles. I mean, plenty to talk about to Stuart Lawley if we can get him to come on the show sometime. Whether or not .XXX, I mean, to sum up your question, you know, has it been a success or not? I would say, so far, no, probably not. But it could be a success at some point in the future. I mean, it doesn't have to be a success overnight for it still to be a success. Because, you know, what exactly would you qualify it as, you know, how would you say this is a success, this isn't a success? You know, if it's based purely on numbers of domains registered, then, you know, nothing will ever compare to a .com. If it is providing the domain holders with value and their audience is getting what they're looking for, which in the case of Dutch Triplex is going to be hardcore porn, then maybe that's a success. I don't know. I mean, it's a bit hard to say right now. Maybe it's something that in a year or 2 years we can come back and look at it and go, well, right, yeah.
Are there other things to your knowledge that they're hoping to offer down the line, Michele, or you know, in terms of so that they're just now introducing what we're, you know, are we a year into it? No, we're not. We're about six months into it, really. 6-9 months, is it, I guess, into it?
Something like that.
Yeah.
And my brain's not working very well.
It's just now that they're adding the search.xxx index. I'm just wondering, are there other things that they plan to do?
Well, the thing is, they're not going to tell us straight away. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was actually December of last year.
Yeah.
When it launched. You know, some of the things that they've said in the past to us, oh, you know, we've got all these interesting plans, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, without specifying exactly what it was.
Yeah.
But, you know, that they had lots of interesting plans and there were lots of things that they were going to do. You know, have they delivered on what they promised? Well, they haven't not delivered, I suppose. I mean, whether they've actually delivered more than what they'd initially promised. Again, hard to say.
You're still involved with registering .xxx domain names?
Yes, of course.
At Black Knight. And, you know, is there anything you can say in relation to that? I mean, has there, you know, is it, what's, I mean, what's the experience like?
Are we run off our feet with the demand?
I'm guessing you're not.
No, we're not.
No. And they're what? They're $125 or something each, if I recall.
No, they're not that much now that it's live. But, yeah, you know, it's not a cheap domain extension. It's not, like, the thing with domains is that over the last few years, the price of domain names has dropped significantly. Now, whether that was a good thing or a bad thing is arguable. I mean, there's it's like so many things. I mean, if in some cases it's been a rush to the bottom in terms of pricing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can register a .com domain name for, you know, under a tenner a year, and many times it'll be a fraction of a tenner. Now, if you think about what that domain name allows you to do, then you're getting tremendous value.
You are. And then I suppose it begs the question as to whether the premium domain names are offering anything extra to justify their price tag. And I'm thinking of .xxx. .co is another example, in a way. Maybe not. It's not, certainly not in the same kind of area as .xxx. But there's a similar prospect there, which is that here's a domain name that offers you something extra in terms of either recognizability or, and as in this case, something extra in terms of the services, the add-on that's there. Is that, I mean, when you have this race to the bottom, Michele, that really is the only other way to look at making money out of this, isn't it, in a way, is to offer a premium top-level domain and something extra to registrants?
Well, yes and no. I mean, the thing is that if you look at some of the lower price domain extensions, sure, there's large volumes of domains, but I mean, are there as many active developed websites providing value to users? I mean, you know, never mind the registrants or the registries or the registrars. You know, are there interesting things being done with those? I mean, can you find useful information if you go to keyword.extension?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what you'll find is that with the slightly more expensive domain names, you're not going to go off and register 10 or 20 at a time. You might register one, maybe two. You're not, so, you know, the people are more likely to actually use the domain actively. It's also down to how the thing is positioned and how it's marketed. So like .co has positioned itself as being a slightly more premium domain because they wanted people to actually use it. .xxx, again, it's positioning itself as being a premium domain because, I mean, look at it, you know, adult content, the adult entertainment industry, it's one of the few online sectors that has made money since the get-go. You know, it's not like so many of the other online services that were kind of operating on the basis of, I don't know, build it and they will come, and maybe eventually you'll have a big enough user base and somebody will acquire you. You know, they had to actually make money.
And are you making money?
With what?
With your involvement in domains such as .xxx and .co, or is it more of just a case of a loss leader for you?
For domains in general?
Well, no, premium domains, I guess, in that.
No, we don't. They're not a loss leader for us. I mean, we will do discounts, bundles and all that, similar to the way a lot of other people will do. But no, there wouldn't be a loss leader.
Well, what I'm saying is it worth your while? Or is every domain, are some domains for you, you know, how do you as a registrar decide what domains to offer and what domains that perhaps you won't be involved with?
Oh, I see what you mean. Well, generally speaking, I would look at it in terms of domain extensions that people have an interest in registering. Even if they're domain extensions that I don't particularly like or that cause me a lot of headaches for other reasons, if there is a market demand for it, then we will offer it. So, for example, if I could stop offering .ie domain names in the morning, I would.
You've spoken about this before, that there's a lot of difficulty, there's a lot of red tape, and there's a lot of it's labor intensive.
It's very labor intensive, it causes a lot of headaches with everything else. And you know, they'll argue that, you know, it's a lot better than it used to be, blah blah blah, and they'll try to justify the added hassle. But the reality is, you know, that when it comes to domain names are a gateway, they're a facilitator, they're a way to get something done. They're not an end in themselves. I mean, if you remember when we were talking to Nacho from .cat a while back, a couple of months ago, about .cat and what's going on there. I mean, .cat, again, it's a premium domain in many respects, but it serves a particular type of community and user, so it makes sense to offer them.
Yeah,
if you want to reach those users, obviously.
Incidentally, while we're on the subject of .ie, while you were away, Michele, and I know you were away, but as you said, you were working as well while you were away, and you were commenting and I noticed tweeting and blogging about this as well. The .ie domain registry had some downtime.
That would be an understatement.
What happened?
The Saturday before I left for Montenegro, they went offline at around 1:30 in the afternoon, and they were offline from then through till Monday morning.
Now, when you say offline, what does that mean? DNS was unavailable, or
no? The existing .ie domain names continued to function.
Okay,
they continued to resolve, to use the tech term. So, if you had an existing fully registered, fully functional .ie domain name prior to the outage, you wouldn't have noticed anything happening. I mean, you would not have been impacted. Unless, of course, you wanted to update your name servers, transfer your domain to a different registrar, renew your domain, or do anything like that. And as a registrar, we couldn't register any new domain names. We couldn't do any updates or any transfers. Whois was down. All of the functionality that you'd expect to find was offline.
So it didn't affect users, let's say, accessing existing domain, websites and existing domains and that. But anything to do with moving stuff around, registering new domains, anything like that, transferring them, all of that backed up over a period of, what are you saying, 2 days?
Yep.
Yeah. And do they offer any explanation or any...
Well, I mean, they eventually, yeah, I mean, we got some explanation, but not a huge amount. I mean, the thing is that if you look at, you know, .com or .info or .mobi or any of the other domain extensions from registries of all shapes and sizes, they have scheduled maintenance windows. It's quite common. I mean, .cc and .tv are having a maintenance window in 2 days' time. VeriSign run maintenance windows for .com about once a month. My inboxes inundated with these notifications from them, and you know they'll give themselves a window of an hour or 2 hours to do something, and most of the time you'll get an email to say, right, we're starting our maintenance, and maybe half an hour to an hour later you'll get an email back on, yeah, that's done, and it's fine, it's grand, you know what's going on, and nothing. It only affects certain services. They might take certain services offline while they're doing stuff. In the case of .ie, no. I mean, the communication wasn't exactly stellar. It's still not 100% clear exactly what happened. But more importantly, it's not clear what changes they have made in order to avoid this kind of issue in the future. And that, to me, is much more concerning.
Mm. And GoDaddy had an outage during since we were on last in the podcast as well. But in their case, they said it was initially, I think someone in Anonymous was claiming that it was a denial of service attack. But GoDaddy eventually said, no, it was our own fault.
Yeah, that was, oh God, that was ridiculous. I mean, not ridiculous from GoDaddy's point, but I mean, just the coverage of that outage was... it was ridiculous. I mean, I knew that there was going to be all sorts of really badly misinformed comments on blogs and everywhere else. But I mean, you'd entities like Wired. I mean, Wired, for God's sake. You'd think Wired would know better. Wired put up one of their staff put up a blog post claiming that GoDaddy had moved all its domains to their quote-unquote competitor, VeriSign.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, seriously? You know, do a bit of fact-checking, for God's sake. Now, I mean, the GoDaddy outage was massive. It brought down, I'm not even too sure how many websites, domains, and other services were impacted by it. But, you know, it was a very, very large number. Let's just say that. And there was a lot of rumors flying around about what happened. It was the Anonymous thing. There was other crazy theories flying around,
and in their case, it was the actual their hosting that was affected. So sites actually went down.
Well, it was something on their network that was affected. It was a network. I mean, according to the statement that they put out on their site, it was an issue in their internal network that caused all the problems. How that actually happened, I don't know. Whether you know we'll ever know all the details is highly doubtful, but I'm sure somebody lost their job. You know, it was a big screw up, and you know they said right, you know, we screwed up.
Yeah.
You know, they admitted that they fixed it as quickly as they could. They tried their best to communicate with their customers, and of course they got a lot of flack.
Yeah.
But you know that's what's going to happen.
As I said, there was loads happening while you were away, Michele, and it's a pity we didn't get to podcast a little bit sooner. We've got a lot to talk about, as I say, in part two of the show. We're also going to talk about Black Knight Special Offers of the Week. But before we do that, just want to draw your attention to a post. I've put it into the notes there and we will blog it as well. This is something actually there was a lot of discussion about on the Twitter circles and Google Plus and all kinds of places on the internet, particularly in Ireland, but it attracted international attention today on the 24th, 25th of September. Today was Tuesday, of course. But over the last 2 days, a post put up by a man named Leo Trainer, who is, as far as I can gather from the post, lives in Dublin. Leo is someone I've seen from time to time. He's a moderately... busy Twitter tweeter, I suppose you could say, in Irish Twitter circles. I looked at some of the other posts on his blog and he talks about his Twitter usage, and he'd be somebody who would have in the past been active, let's say, on the Vincent Brown hashtag in relation to Vincent's late night news and current affairs programme on TV3 here in Ireland. And you know, someone I've seen him in numerous different circles. He describes himself as a crossword what is it again? He's I haven't got his Twitter address or his Twitter profile here, but someone who he makes up crossword puzzles. He does other things as well. He's described as a political consultant, and he keeps a fairly low profile. He uses his real name, but he doesn't actually publish a whole load of personal information either. But it emerged from this blog post that he has suffered from a sustained attack by a troll. And a troll is a term perhaps that, you know, we've thrown around a good deal, perhaps, Michaela, and people use a lot. This is more serious than trolling, to be quite honest with you. This is stalking, harassment, intimidation and you know, death threats almost, I think, in case of some of the material that was sent to Leo over a period, a sustained period, as he said, of 3 years, leading to him quitting Twitter, I think, back in August. But he said that he was approached by someone, or he got in touch with somebody who told him that they could help him to track the troll. And he took them up on the offer. And similar to what was done in relation to Chris Andrews, I don't know if you remember, we were talking about that a few weeks back in terms of somebody who was anonymously posting some derogatory comments in relation to people involved in political circles, in particular in Fianna Fáil in Dublin. And this was similar to this in the sense that the guy who helped Leo to track down this troll helped him to basically put out some bait for the troll. The troll clicked on the bait. They clicked on the links. They got the troll's IP addresses, and they narrowed it down in this case to two IP addresses in particular, two of which turned out to be public Wi-Fi, and one, Leo was astonished to discover, was the IP address of the home of a friend of his, and the troll turned out to be the friend's 17-year-old son. We'll link to the blog post. It's on Leo's blog at trainerseye.com, and it is really astonishing. It's very well written. Leo's a good blogger, and he's got a very good blogging style. But it really is astonishing. You know, just to quote a little bit of it, the third location was a friend's house. The troll was his son, his 17-year-old son. I was gobsmacked. I spoke to my friend at length. He told me how his son was always glued to his laptop, tablet or smartphone, how he couldn't watch a TV show without tweeting about it simultaneously, how he'd become engrossed in conspiracy sites, and it also became clear that the other two IP addresses had been used by the son. He was horrified at what his son had done, horrified but not surprised. He wanted to call the authorities there and then and turn him in, but I said no. And he goes on to describe how he arranged to have a meeting with his friend's wife and their son in what he described as a quiet and discreet location. The son, the troll who had almost driven him mad, was totally unaware that he'd be joining them. And he goes on to describe the encounter and basically described for these three people, for the troll and his family, what he had been through. And the young man burst into tears and apologised. So it's actually very, very, very well written. It's kind of, people have described it today as compelling reading, and been impressed by a number of things, including Leo's restraint in terms of not reporting the young man to the Gardaí. As he said, I'm not criminalising a 17-year-old kid and ruining his future, but I will write about it, he said, and you must all guarantee me that he'll go and see a counsellor about this, or I will go legal on you. That's what he said. He said to this family in particular. It's disturbing, and when you read about some of the abuse that he received, and it graduated from Twitter and Facebook, Michele, to actually sending abusive and threatening and some frightening material to Leo's home as well. Some of it really is in the realm of racism and of hate speech, I think you would describe it as, in particular referring to Leo's heritage, has a Jewish ancestry, and some of this was very targeted, very racist and very anti-Semitic in nature. I don't know if you had a chance to read about it, Michele, but there was a lot of talk about it on Twitter last night and this morning.
Yeah, I mean, I saw bits about it. I mean, look, the thing about, you know, trolls is, you know, there's lots of them out there. And, you know, there are people, I mean, some of them probably are a little, more than a little disturbed. Others, you know, they feed on the attention, they feed on the reaction. I mean, if you, if you ignore them, a lot of them will go away. I mean, some of them can be quite sinister. I think, you know, the best thing to do is, you know, link to the to his blog post. And, I mean, there's also that article on one of the Irish Times blogs that goes into it. And also, I mean, I think, you know, at some point you will end up running into a troll. It's inevitable.
Have you done so?
Of course I have. I've had my trolls, my stalkers, my other little fans, as I like to refer to them. I mean, sure, they can get under your skin to a certain level, but, you know, it's a reality, and you learn to deal with it.
Does it cause you to? Okay, you live your life online, Michele, and you're very engaged in it's your career, and it's more than that; it's your way of life. Do you ever reevaluate that in that context and say, have you pulled back from online communities as a result of trolling or other unpleasant activity?
Well, I suppose the thing is, I mean, if you're not comfortable on, say, you know, on a mailing list or for a forum, a social network or whatever, because of the behavior and the attitude and the general kind of way that people act, then kind of at a subconscious level you might pull back. But, you know, would I change what I do and how I do it? Probably not, no. Because, you know, there are certain things that I do not share. There are certain topics that I generally will not discuss online. Well, maybe online, but not publicly, let's just say. So while you might think that I kind of share every single thing that I do online, the reality is that, well, actually I don't.
Yes.
So I think, you know, the certain things that, you know, you learn to be careful about. I mean, things like, say, publishing your mobile phone number, publishing your home address, publishing your actual date of birth, other things like that. I mean, some of these things I'm not that concerned about. Other things I would be a little bit concerned about, because maybe somebody has kind of tried to use that in a way that wasn't particularly comfortable for me.
It's the anonymity that that the internet and online interaction gives us, which can be a really good thing in itself, but it also can bring out the worst in some people as well. And that other blog post that you referred to, it's on one of the Irish Times blogs, is by Irish Times journalist Una Mullally. And we'll link to that, as I say, as well, because Una links to Leo's blog post, but also goes on to discuss the issue in general and also specifically in relation to her own experience of trolls and abusive behaviour. And it's something that's interesting, I think, as well, Michele, that we've talked about before, or we've seen before in Ireland and around the world as well, is the experience of women online can be, there's a lot of misogyny, there's a lot of sexism, and there's a lot of, there's a particular kind of abuse, I think, that they experience, which perhaps you and I don't, even though we can face abuse indeed in our own way. But it's worth, you know, I think with, when it comes to things like this, it's worth shining a light on this kind of behaviour and showing solidarity, I think, with people. And I was just, as I say, very impressed with the reaction today. Leo has been overwhelmed by it, and he has tweeted about that as well. And we'll link to his blog post, we'll link to his Twitter account as well. And I think it was handled overall in this case, I think, particularly well. Let's move on. What are we going to talk about? We're going to talk about Black Knight. Michele, of course, your business, your company, sponsors of technology.ie. And what is it? You're still doing the .ie promotion, is it? To register or transfer a .ie domain name for just €5.99.
Yes. Very simple. Register, transfer a .ie for €5.99 when you buy an annual hosting plan. Very simple. Very straightforward. That's it.
Okay,
moving on.
Technology.ie
is brought to you by Ireland's premier hosting and domain registration company, Black Knight. Black Knight offer a comprehensive range of hosting and domain solutions for businesses of all shapes and sizes, no matter where they are in the world.
Anything else coming up that you want to talk about from the point of view of Black Knight this week?
No, I mean, there's a lot of events going on. I was meant to be speaking at an event down in County Waterford there next week, but unfortunately that was cancelled. I should be at the IIA Net Visionary Awards this Friday, mm-hmm. As a guest of somebody. We're not up for any awards, or we're not a sponsor or anything. There's quite a few other things. I mean, we've got our new business development manager. I'm sending him off to as many events as I can, because there's so many things on, and there's only so many you can actually go to whilst trying to get other things done. And of course, I've got the ICANN meeting coming up in a couple of weeks in Toronto.
Now, you're part of a group that has put together a submission to ICANN, Michaela. I know you wanted to talk about that as well. You've blogged it on the Black Knight blog. It's in relation to the new top level domain names, and you and others have blogged about this in the past. You have done so. Dave Weiner, one of the I suppose visionaries in terms of the internet, has done so as well. And you and a few other people have got together to write an open letter to ICANN. Tell us what that's about, and why have you done so, and what have you stated, or what have you submitted to ICANN?
Well, I suppose to answer that, I'd go back a little bit. At the moment, there's about 20 odd GTLDs, in other words, Comnet, Org, InfoBiz, and there's .XXX we mentioned. And there's several others that we've mentioned in the past, plus a few that you probably haven't even heard about. There's about 20 of them. There's about 250 country codes, so .ie, .co.uk, .fr, .de, .me. All these are country codes. And as we've mentioned several times in the past, ICANN launched this new TLD program a few years back, and it was this entire opening up thing. Thousands of companies had the opportunity to express, to kind of say, right, we want to run .app, or we want to run a .music, or we want to run a .irish, or we want to run a .book, or a .cloud, or a .blog. And they went to ICANN, they submitted their application, they paid the application fee, and now there's an entire evaluation process and everything else. And back in June, the full list of applications was made public, and we were able to see what people had applied for and how many of them had multiple applications, as well as getting some insight into what they intended to do with the domain name, with the domain extension. So what we're talking about here is the bit on the right-hand side of the dot. So if you take, say, technology.ie, the bit on the right, the extension is the right on the right of the dot is IE. So if you have, say, a .shop, then the registry would run .shop, and we as businesses could get domain names beginning with whatever we wanted .shop. So let's say we could have blackknight.shop. You could have edgecast.shop. You could have Tesco.shop, all these kind of things.
Yes, but what you're concerned about, Michaela, is if Tesco, for example, as a for example, buys .shop and owns and operates the .shop domain extension, and if they say only Tesco shops can use it, that then is closed to any other kinds of shop, and only a particular proprietary company can use the .shop domain. That is what is being proposed here, or that is what you feel there's a risk of, and that's what you're objecting to. Is that right?
Yeah, basically. Because most of the applications are to use keywords, generic word terms, in an open fashion. So there's several applications for .shop, so anybody who wanted to register a .shop domain name would be able to do so. Perfect, grand, competition, innovation, more choice, etc., etc., etc. So instead of, let's say, for example, say in Ireland, your surname is Murphy, Murphy.ie is gone. Murphy.com is gone. Murphy.co is gone. Murphy.me is gone. But let's say you were running a shop, you might be able to get Murphy.shop. But if Tesco, and Tesco isn't actually one of the companies involved, but we'll use them as an example because they're big enough. If Tesco, what's happened is that several companies, L'Oreal, Google, Amazon, have gone for generic keywords similar to .shop, and not .shop. Examples are things like .blog and .music. And they want to, you know, tie it up so that only they would be the ones who would solely control it. The domains would all be registered to them and controlled by them. And while in some cases they might allow a third-party user to register, in inverted commas, a domain name under that extension, it would be the same as registering a username on Facebook. Hmm. You know, Facebook controls Facebook. If Facebook want to disable your Facebook account or your Facebook page, they can do so. They can take it away from you. You know, they don't have to consult with anybody else because it's their little space.
And in particular, I mean, you mentioned, do we know that they want to restrict access to these domains? Let's talk about the Google example in particular. You say that Google have applied to run .blog. Do we know that they want to restrict that, that they intend to restrict that, for example, to blogs that are running on their own platform, for example?
Yes.
We do. They've stated that.
Oh, they've stated it in the application.
Right.
I mean, what the application for .blog from Google says that it's for Blogspot users. Mm. So if you're not a Blogspot user, you would not be able to get access to a .blog. And let's say if you started your blog on this .blog using Blogspot, and then you decided that for whatever reason that service didn't suit you and you wanted to use, say, WordPress or Joomla or whatever, you wouldn't be able to do that.
You'd have to give up your .blog domain name.
Yes.
If you wanted to move to a different platform. So that's quite restrictive from that point of view. Michele, though, isn't this kind of thing, in a way, self-limiting? Isn't this going to reduce the value of, say, the .blog or the .music domain extension because people will look at it and say, well, that's a closed shop?
Well, that's hard to say. Because, I mean, how do people actually find information on the internet now anyway?
Well, they go to Google.
Oh, well, there you go.
No, but what I'm saying is they go to a search engine and they type in what they're looking for. They may they may not say this has to be on a .blog.
No, but this is the thing. Who decides how the results are ranked? Hmm. I mean, there's been...
Well, that's a separate issue there, isn't it?
No, they're tied. No. They're linked. Because if you look at... Say you do a search for me now on Google, or you do a search for yourself.
Yeah.
Which social network is going to appear in the search results?
Google Plus.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I rest my case.
No, but that is a case, and no doubt about it. But I'm confusing the issue maybe by using Google as an example. Let's say, who wants to use .music?
.music is Amazon.
Amazon, okay. So isn't that going to restrict the value of that? You know, so leaving the Google...
Maybe it won't. I suppose, but the thing is this, it's a bigger question, is that, okay, the new TLD thing, the entire new TLD project has been delayed for years, and there's been so many extra protections and things put into it. Mm. To protect big brand holders. And, you know, the thing is that all of these protections were there to protect them. Mm. So that if, for example, .Gucci want to have .Gucci, and they want to be able to use that to promote various Gucci product services, product lines, whatever they want to do, then that's fine. I don't have any issue with that.
That's fine and fair. Nobody else is going to want to use .Gucci.
No, and they have, you know, loads of protections in place to make sure that dot Gucci could only be registered, it could only be run by Gucci. And they're also looking for protection so that if somebody wants to register, say, Gucci.shop, the Gucci, the big brand holder, will get a be notified in advance, and that they will be able to do something to stop somebody from doing that. So how can you get this? You have to get this balance right. I mean, you have to allow for the innovation. So what gives Amazon or Google or L'Oreal or any of these big brands, what gives them a special right to an entire domain namespace on a generic term? Not a term that they have special rights in. Like, if Amazon wants to have .amazon, fine.
It's a good point. And as you say, if you have intellectual property rights in the domain extension, then that's fair enough. If not, you're saying you can still run it, but you can't run it on a restricted basis, Michele. Is that
it? It needs to be open. You need to allow
your competitors to use it as well.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's not just a matter of competitors. I mean, you know, let's say, for example, with the extension, like, say, .music. Is music controlled by Amazon?
No, and your point is that music is a generic term. They don't have any intellectual property rights in that term, and so if they're to run that domain extension, they have to do it in an open.
The thing is that we within the ICANN community and everything else. I mean, we've been fighting this ongoing battle with intellectual property rights holders. I mean, it comes back to a lot of the debates and discussions we've been having over the last few months around that entire kind of relationship and balance between the two. And, you know, there has to be, they can't have it both ways. I mean, you can't have it so that I'm protecting San Pellegrino, so I'm looking at a bottle here on my desk, and I'm also allowing San Pellegrino to have, say, .water.
Yeah.
Because, it's just the entire thing is insane. So, I mean, there's a letter that's drafted that is there. I mean, it's quite technical and quite dense in many respects, and I can't apologize for that. That's just the reality. But, you know, several other registrars and other people in industry signed on to that letter. But, I mean, it's a story that, you know, Dave Weiner wrote about it, I wrote about it, other people have written about it. Over the last few months, can you imagine a situation, say, where we say with cloud computing being such a big buzzword, a big thing? I mean, call it what you will. Imagine a situation where only, say, one company could have .cloud domain names.
Yeah,
I mean, that's nuts. So that's where that entire thing came from. But yeah.
Or even another example you've in there as well, L'Oreal. You've mentioned they're one of the applicants for .beauty, as you say. I wasn't sure which one they'd applied for. But Michele, I take your point, and I do appreciate that you have an insight on this, and that you and the other industry people who have signed this open letter to ICANN in relation to this have a perspective on this. And it's in relation to, as you say, it's quite technical in relation to some of the rules, regulations, terms and conditions and all of that in relation to this process by ICANN. My feeling is that the internet will root around it. The people, the community will root around it. If someone operates a generic one in a restrictive way, you know, I think there's plenty more words out there. And I think the generic term will lose its value, would be my feeling, if it's operated in a restrictive way. But it'll be interesting to see which way this goes. As you're hoping it won't come to that, and that this will actually be addressed by ICANN. That next meeting is coming up when, Michele?
Around the 12th or so
of October.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you know, the meetings, the fun thing is that the meeting actually doesn't start until a Monday, but they issued the schedule there the last 48 hours. And they actually have meetings scheduled from the Friday morning, which I won't be attending because I'll be in the air. It's from officially from the 14th until the 18th of October in Toronto in Canada, and it's being hosted by the .ca registry.
Okay. Well, we'll hear more about that in due course from you as well. There was some Apple announced a phone, did they, or something, Michele? iPhone?
I heard this thing. It's like a very big, long phone. It's like an iPhone 4, but way longer.
Did you see the iPhone 10? Somebody did a Photoshop job.
I was. Part of the reason I couldn't be on with you over the last couple of weeks is that my internet connection situation was a little bit flaky.
Yes.
It's when I travel, it's that often happens. Yeah. But this time round, between one thing and another, I was really in a bad way. I was in the worst, for a few days, I was in possibly the worst hotel in the world. It's not even a hotel. This place called Villa Grand in Budva in Montenegro.
Take a bow, Villa Grand.
Avoid. Keep away from it. They had a 1 meg connection.
For the whole hotel?
Well, I don't know. That's all I could get out if it was 1 meg. To be able to use anything like VoIP, you could do us, but it might not work for more than about 30 seconds. Yeah, I mean, the iPhone 5, that was a... People have been waiting for that for months. Been a lot of rumors and speculation. There's a couple. I mean, I don't think we need to go into too much into this. I mean, it's been done to death. But I did find an interesting article in Information Week where they ripped the thing apart and dissect the hardware and go through all the funky insides on it.
What did they discover?
Excuse me?
What did they discover?
I know, they just went through it. I mean, it's just going through, like, you know, this... all the bits and bobs that go into it, and, you know, things like the retina displays and all that kind of thing, you know, batteries, blah, blah, blah. I mean, quite interesting if you're an Apple fanboy. I admit I am to a point.
It's bigger, it's longer, it's got more battery as a result of that, which it's going to need because it's supporting LTE, which is faster mobile broadband in
the
States.
It's faster internet, Con. It makes the internet go faster.
We haven't got that here yet, have we?
No, we don't.
Are we waiting to close down the analog television network before we get it?
Me started. The analog versus digital thing, I mean, the amount of money they're spending on advertising that is insane. And I gather from a couple of things I've heard over the last couple of weeks, it sounds like quite a few people have not switched over.
I haven't.
I think a lot of people won't.
It's not, well, they'll have to, Michele, on the 24th.
Well, not necessarily.
Why?
Well, I mean, I think for some people at the moment, the idea of spending any extra money on anything is such they might just do without TV for a while.
That could be interesting.
Well, I know quite a few people who actually don't even really use TV anymore.
Yeah, well, fair enough if you don't. But if you do, and again, depending on what your family situation is like and all of that, that's fine. Again, if you have Sky, you're not even going to worry about this because, or UPC or some satellite or cable plan, you're not going to worry about that. We got rid of that last Christmas. I know I've talked about it before. I'm looking at it. I've changed my work and business situation. So I actually have a lot of hardware in the office I'm no longer using because most of my work is working for another company now. And so from that point of view, I'm actually thinking of perhaps redeploying some of that hardware into a media center in the living room at home. Might be something we'd look at or not. But yeah, I know it's interesting as to whether or not people will I suppose, you know, I don't know that there'll be, I think anyone that uses analog TV right now is probably going to want to switch over. It's something we might talk about in the next couple of programs, but let's get back to the iPhone 5 just for a moment, Michele. As I say, it has LTE in the States. That's going to be a battery drain. It's bigger, it's longer, it is lighter.
It's got go faster stripes as well, Colin.
It's lighter, Michele, which is, I think, something that's impressed people as well. That it's lighter than the iPhone 4S, and people are one of the things I heard about it is that a lot of people, when you look at it on paper, it doesn't look like much, but when you hold it in your hand, it's a different situation. Are you planning to upgrade in the near future?
Probably. I mean, at the moment, we're going through an entire process with our mobile operator. We're currently with Vodafone. But, you know, there's a few things that Vodafone do in terms of their pricing and the costs and everything else that concern us a little bit. So we've been exploring other options. So we've been talking to O2 and Three. And some of the stuff that the other operators are offering are quite interesting. Others, not so much. I mean, you know, it depends on your usage and what you're doing and how you're doing it, whether you roam quite a bit. I do. You know, do I need to make lots of phone calls when I'm roaming? Possibly not, but I still probably need to be able to do that. And there's, you know, the charges change or vary quite a bit between between the various networks.
So, whether and when you upgrade is it's a corporate decision for you, really, Michele?
Well, yeah. I mean, we're looking at it. We're talking to three operators. And we're going to, you know, see, excuse me, who can come back to us with the best overall plan for our usage. I mean, it's not driven solely by price, because I mean, if it was driven by price alone, then this decision would be relatively simple. The thing, of course, is, you know, some companies will offer you what appears to be a very, very good offer, a very good solution, but you know, their network coverage mightn't be that good, or their customer service could suck. So
as they say, you guys in BlackNet are going to be looking at it from the point of view of what they call TCO, the total cost of ownership, or the total cost of the service, I suppose.
Well, this is it. I mean, if I'm up in Dublin, so somewhere near Dublin Airport, and I have calls dropping on me, that's not good.
No,
that would drive me absolutely mad. So, you know, as a result of that, of course, we'd be looking at the prices that they're all charging for the iPhone 5. And as you'd expect, if you sign on for a longer period contract, you'll get a better price on the handset. And what it cracks me up is they've all saying things like, okay, these are the prices, you know, sign up for the 2-year or the 3-year contract, and it's this much, and if you do that, I'll be able to knock an extra whatever off it.
But I find it's interesting, Michele, and, you know, what we're doing here, we started this discussion talking about the iPhone 5 and its launch and all of that, but it's interesting that it's not revolutionary, it's an incremental improvement on the iPhone 4S. From your point of view, you know, you're not rushing out to... You can wait. You can wait to get your hands on an iPhone 5 in due course. You know, it's not like that revolution that the original iPhone was, for example. You know, it's
I mean,
okay.
No, I can wait, sure.
But yeah, you're discussing it in the context of your overall corporate communication needs rather than saying, I've got to get my hands on that new hot piece of hardware.
Well, this is it. I mean, it's, you know, you can't just kind of rush off and get, you know, the kind of the great big shiny.
Yeah. Did you upgrade the OS though?
Not yet.
No. Well, and
because of the maps thing.
Yes.
Is something that does worry me a little bit.
They've screwed that up rightly, haven't they?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's no two ways about it. It's, I mean, from what I've heard, any reports I've heard have said, you know, that it's that the maps are pretty bad. And then, of course, that entire thing there the other day, what was it?
The airport in Dundrum?
Yeah, the airport in Dundrum.
Moving Dublin Zoo to Temple Bar?
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
although some said maybe that's actually quite accurate, depending on, and certainly at 3 o'clock in the morning, it probably is an accurate description of Temple Bar.
Well, this is it. I mean, you know, moving an entire airport and a zoo and everything else. I mean, that does take a little bit of extra work.
Misspellings, all of that. There are sites set up to parody this now, and reports coming in from all over the world. It seems apparently, and I was listening to another podcast today on this subject, it seems that it works fine in San Francisco, Michele. It's just the rest of the world that wasn't ready. And really, isn't this a misstep by Apple? And isn't it really a sign of something that was driven...
No, hold on. For every detractor, there's somebody else who'll have something positive to say about it. I mean, there's been a lot of talk.
I haven't seen anyone say anything positive about the Apple Maps app, Michele. Not a single person has anything to say, except that it's clearly not ready for the market.
Well, what I've seen coming in from a few places is that it's going to evolve fairly quickly. It'll improve very quickly. I mean, they've got some good technology partnerships. Mm. I mean, you know, the thing about Apple is they're a big target. They're a big, juicy target.
Don't they always say it too, though? And, you know, people are saying it's a misstep by Apple, but actually it's true to form by Apple. Even in the Steve Jobs day, people would say, don't buy version one. And this is version one of their mapping app, of their mapping software.
Also, they've also dumped YouTube as well, which is...
They have, but YouTube, I think, there is a... What have they done in relation to that? There's no longer an... Apple no longer install a YouTube app by default, but there is a Google... There is a YouTube app you can install now, isn't there?
I'm not sure if there is, but the thing is that...
Well, it's interesting. I mean, this is Apple versus Google, and this is what Apple promised they were going to do. This is what they announced they were doing. Is it 6 months ago or more that they were moving away? They would not include Google Maps in their native or in their default map application. And this really is part of the war over the intellectual property war and the viewpoint, for example, expressed by Steve Jobs that Android was a stolen product and he was declaring thermonuclear war on Google over it.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, look, I mean, ultimately, it's a new Apple product. It's going to get talked about to death. I mean, we've already spent more time talking about this than I think it merits because everybody else has talked about it.
Okay.
Everybody else has blogged about it. I mean, there's nothing that anybody can say about the iPhone 5 now that hasn't been said already. I mean, you know, I haven't got one yet. Mm. When I get one, I will either love it or I will hate it. But don't worry, I'll share my views.
And are you going to hold off on the iOS 6 update?
I don't know. Mm. I really don't know.
Well, let us know how you get on.
I do use the Maps app on the iPhone. Not a huge amount. I don't care about the public transport stuff, so I don't really use public transport that much. Because, I mean, most of the time I'm either going from point A to point B, or if it's just, I'm in some foreign city and I've no idea where the hell I'm going, I've always been hopeless on buses anyway. Yeah. So, you know, that wouldn't help me too much.
Well, I use the maps on my mobile device on my Android phone, and I use them for navigation and I use it for turn by turn when I'm driving, and that is my GPS for driving and all of that as well. As I mentioned a few weeks back, I had a very successful experience with Google Maps and turn by turn navigation on a recent trip to France. So, happy out here in Android land, Michele. But as I say, we'll come back to this again in due course and talk about it as well. Let's move on. We wanted to talk about Kickstarter, and you've picked out a particular Kickstarter project which is worthy of notion and worthy of mention this week.
Yeah, well, this is what I refer to as the ultimate geeky light bulb. It's a supercharged, super duper, all singing, all dancing, Wi-Fi enabled, IPv6 capable light bulb. With a full SDK.
Why, Michele? Why would you have an SDK and an IPv6? Why would you want to address a light bulb?
Why not?
I'm just wondering.
Why not? I mean, you're such an old codger.
Yeah, no, I'm just wondering what the applications are. LIFX is the smartest light bulb you've ever experienced. It's a Wi-Fi enabled, energy efficient, multicolored bulb. Oh, I see. Yeah, getting exciting. That you control.
No, it's the thing about this, Con. There's two things. There's two things to this story. And, you know, the thing is, a friend of mine, you know, well-known figure in the tech circles, shared the Kickstarter project on Facebook. Mm. And when I went to that project, they had a goal of $100,000. And at the time I looked at it first, I think they'd hit maybe 30,000 or something. But they were, you know, they were well away from their 100K target. In the space of about 48 hours, they hit the target and they exceeded it. And when I looked at the project there earlier this evening, they'd raised over $1.3 million from a project that had a goal of 100,000.
Okay.
So, I mean, you know, they've managed to capture people's imagination.
It's captured my imagination. Just to finish what I was saying there in terms of the description of it, you can control this bulb with your iPhone or Android. It gives you unprecedented control of your lights, reduces your energy costs, lasts up to 25 years. Okay, that's interesting. And delivers an amazing range of experiences we think you'll love. Loads of issues I want to say in relation to this. First of all, Michele, the first thing I think about when I'm buying replacement light bulbs is how much the hell are they? Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the moment when you're looking at CFL light bulbs and energy efficient light bulbs, they're considerably dearer than the old incandescent ones. They're supposed to last longer. And guess what? Some of them actually do. And so in the long run, yes, it is worthwhile. But yeah, I mean, this would, I imagine, be more expensive than your average light bulb. But then again, if it lasts up to 25 years, well, up to is an interesting word there. But yeah, you could certainly see the value perhaps.
Okay, let's just knock this one on the head, right?
Yeah.
Your standard light bulbs, I mean, they lasted reasonably well, but you'd probably get a year or so out of a light bulb, I'd say. I mean, I never sat down and worked it out. But I mean, you know, depending on the light and how long it was on for and everything else, you'd get a year or whatever out of it. Over the last 2 or 3 years, I've changed pretty much all the light bulbs in this house over to the newer ones. Mm-hmm. And I haven't had to change any of those bulbs yet. And as well, they're drawing way less power than
No, that's true. And no, that's all fair enough and good. And yeah, no, but this is cool. I agree with you. This is cool.
The thing about this is, if you have a look at the video, like I blogged about it on the technology.ie blog, if you have a look at the video, they're going to something. But it's what's interesting as well is that, you know, around the same time as this project was garnering a huge amount of attention, Kickstarter published a post to kind of change their guidelines and rules and everything else about what people can make claims about. Because one of the problems, of course, is it's very easy for somebody to say, my invention will do X, my invention will do Y, and get people to buy into it on that basis. The way Kickstarter funded and a lot of those other ones work is, you know, you put in X amount and you might get one version of the product or more or whatever.
And very often what you get as well in the Kickstarter pitch is you'll get a very attractive looking video, Michele, with a mock-up or a simulation of what the project will look like, how it'll work. And, you know, they can invest a certain amount in producing something that is using special effects and science fiction and animation and all kinds of things to demonstrate something that has no physical form or physical reality in the real space in any way, shape or form. And so, I mean, I could do a Kickstarter project for a teleporter device, for example.
Yeah, of course you could.
And I could use some very cool Star Trek effects to actually demonstrate this, and I could say fund me, and people could look at that and say, whoa man, that's so cool, and go and fund me, and you know, pay me whatever, $100 for a ride on the teleporter or whatever. But the thing is, up until now, and this is what the new Kickstarter guidelines are about, up until now, I didn't have to demonstrate that I had the capability to build my teleporter, and I could just say, you know, anything at all. And this was what was happening. A lot of Kickstarter projects were falling by the wayside, they weren't happening, or, you know, people didn't have the wherewithal or the capability to actually build the things they were doing. They were just very good at writing pitches and designing and producing lovely video simulations of what their project might actually do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this is it. I mean, this was the entire...
So the new regulations they're saying is you've got to... you cannot show any depiction. So, for example, this the LIFX, the light bulb reinvented, this particular project presumably would not qualify under the new guidelines or the new restrictions.
Not necessarily. Because I from what I can gather... They have actually
A prototype. You know,
build prototypes that okay. actually do stuff.
Exactly. So that's what you have to do in this new guidelines. You have to be able to, you can't show anything that isn't a working prototype already. And you can't, and you also have to outline in your pitch what potential pitfalls or obstacles there could be to you actually achieving your goal in relation
exactly.
to this.
Exactly. I mean, the thing is, I mean, it's just, I mean, whether it's coincidence that the two things happened at the same time or whether the two are linked or not, I honestly don't know.
Probably coincidence, because this particular project you've outlined, Michaela, here, this one is cool. Loads of other ones are cool out there as well. And there is a history of a lot of projects like this on Kickstarter and other similar sites that shoot way past their goal for funding. As you said, this one had a goal of 100,000 and it's gone to 1.3 million. Lots of other ones like that as well. So it's certainly newsworthy. It's certainly cool. And it's something I wanted to talk about when I actually, as we started the programme, I realised that I had something I wanted to add to our agenda this evening. Here in Ireland we've got Fundit. I think it's at fundit.ie, and I want to particularly make mention of Mission V. Have you heard of Mission V, Michele?
I saw something about it earlier this evening around the time just before we started talking, but yeah. I don't know a lot about it.
Mission Fee is run by a friend of mine, so full disclosure there. But he's somebody that you would know as well, I think. He's a long-time stalwart of the Irish blogging and tech scene.
James Corbett.
That's James Corbett. He uses the Twitter handle Aeropreneur and blogs using that handle as well. And James has been interested in a lot of things for a good number of years. And one of the things he became very much interested in over the last number of years was virtual worlds. He was somebody that had a lot of interest in Second Life back in the day when there was a lot of talk about that. And this is actually similar to Second Life in that it uses the open sim, the open source version of Second Life, and it deploys that those simulators to for use in primary schools in Ireland. Now, they've done this with an initial pilot in one school in Carlow, in fact, the Gaelscoil there in Carlow, there about 2 years ago, Michele. Last school year, September 2011, I know they launched a project with 20 schools worldwide, or sorry, countrywide, I should say, 20 primary schools in Ireland. And this year, I think it's 38 schools they're working with, and they are looking for 29,000, I think, to actually run that. I could be wrong on those numbers. Let me just see if I can bring it up here. Mission V, Primary Schools Program. And so they have 40 days to go on it. They've just launched it. They have raised 910 so far, and they have got, I think, a target of something in the region of 29,000-30,000, I think, for that, which will allow them to deploy this to 38 primary schools in Ireland. It's interesting because what they do is, obviously, if you're going online in social networks or virtual worlds or anything like that, if you're bringing underage children into an environment like that, you need to have it controlled access to it, and you need to control it, and you need to have it guided and monitored by teachers and people responsible in that area. So the way it works, in the past at least, I know, has been that each school has its own dedicated sim that they operate on, and they're able to work in their own area with just their own schoolmates and teachers on that. But there's also a common area to which all of the schools can go to, and for example, they can put on an exhibition, and different schools can set up a stand at the virtual exhibition space. If you've been in Second Life, I presume, Michaela, you've seen you know what it looks like,
why
or you've seen screen grabs.
Why do you always assume that I've done these things?
Ah, you've done everything, Michaela. Don't be modest. But
admittedly, I have tried Second Life, but I could never get my head around it.
No, it depends. You've got to really have something to do there, and this, I think, has been very effective. I've seen it myself because, again, full disclosure here, about a year ago I produced some promotional videos for Mission V to help in their recruitment for phase two of the project, which was last year, and I went to Carlow to the Gaelscoil there and interviewed some of the kids and got some great responses and great feedback from them. And it's exciting to see what kids can achieve when you put them in that kind of an environment, and what kind of a boost it gives to their learning. But it's exciting, and I just wanted to mention it and give them a boost. If you want to find out more, go to fundit.ie and look for Mission V Primary Schools Programme, and you can find out all about that. And they've, as I said, just launched that yesterday, and they've been getting some very good feedback on that as well. So that's about it, Michele. What else did we want to talk about this week?
Well, there's two other things very quickly. One I'll mention very quickly in passing. Paul Savage tweeted about this. Yoast has been tweeting about this. It's supported in Yoast's WordPress plugin, which is how we've been able to do it. So I do things in the background, Con. You know, you don't. It doesn't all happen by magic. Twitter cards are something that Twitter had launched there in the last few weeks, and it's one of these things where you have to apply to them to have access. But what it means is if your site is enabled for this, when you tweet a link to a blog post, it'll show a lot more information in the tweet. So you get this entire summary thing, which is very cool. So it was enabled on the Black Knight blog there about a week or so ago. And at some point in the last couple of days, it's been enabled for technology.ie. So if you look at the tweets mentioning blog posts on the technology.ie blog, you'll see there's a summary link if you go to the web interface. And if you click on the summary and you expand it out, you'll be able to see, you'll get an image preview, you'll get a snippet of the text, you'll get to see the Twitter handle of the person who wrote the article, as well as the Twitter handle of the site that's associated with the website.
Okay. This shows up in the comments section on technology.ie?
No. Go to twitter.com/blacknight.
Okay.
You're sitting in front of a computer, I assume.
I am indeed, yes.
Yeah, go there. Have a look at there's a couple of tweets from the Black Knight account, like the triple X rate poured in the search engine to launch this week.
Yes.
You see there the summary. If you click the view summary.
Yes.
Do you see the way it says, by Michaela Nalen and my Twitter handle? And then there's...
Oh, yeah.
And there's an image and there's all those other things. And then you see the Black Knight Twitter thing is there as well.
Isn't this just a... And what's behind this? Isn't this just a increased functionality on the Twitter web interface? Or is this something that a plugin is feeding into that? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's extra markup there's extra markup being added on our side.
Okay, gotcha.
So I think we touched on briefly on Open Graph a few months ago.
Not sure, but go on.
Okay, Open Graph is this thing that it means that when you post a link to to Facebook or to Google Plus, it helps to generate the summary, the preview image, and all that. So you get a richer experience rather than just having a plain URL. And using the Open Graph stuff, you can specify which image you consider to be the one that you want to go with the article, which text you want to use for the preview, etc., etc., etc. The same kind of thing is being used by Twitter in this Twitter cards thing. So you can specify in the markup, and you can do it automatically, it obviously saves you time, both the Twitter handle of the web that's associated with the website and the Twitter handle for each individual author that contributes to a website.
And can anyone do this, Michele, or is this using Twitter's API, or is this just something that you can submit in a tweet?
Both. Because what you do is you have to make sure that you're generating the markup on your site. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Yoast's WordPress plugin will do that for WordPress. There's probably other plugins for other CMSs that will do the same thing. And then you have to go to Twitter's developer site and apply for your website to be included. Because otherwise, if your website isn't included, the magic won't happen on the Twitter side.
Okay.
I mean, it's not, you know, kind of groundbreaking or anything like that, but it is still pretty cool.
It is, and I got to say that a lot of that way that, you know, summary information and inline information like that is included now in Twitter, it does make a much better experience. Before you click on a link, you can see where you're going to go.
And exactly.
It is definitely a much better user experience. That's cool. We wanted to talk as well, Michele, about KildareStreet.com, which I suppose that's an example of interoperability, or the failure of interoperability, or you know, the opposite, I suppose, to this kind of interoperability that you've got with Twitter. This was something which was a I suppose, a grassroots movement which started here in Ireland, where basically they were using things, using the information published by the Oireachtas on Dáil debates and things like that. And in as much as that was structured, it was a really useful site for people to access and to, for example, get alerts when particular public representatives would speak or particular topics would be discussed in Dáil debates in the Dáil or the Seanad here in Ireland. And it's something that I know John Handelar in Cork, who's a developer there, had been really at the heart of this and had, I remember him talking originally about it back in 2006, I think it was, finally got up in 2009 and is really... was something that that was very much used by a lot of people. And then this week, last week, it's they just decided to change how they publish things on the Oireachtas websites, and it no longer works in a way that KildareStreet.com can use.
Yeah, I mean, basically, you know, they killed it off.
Deliberately?
I don't know what the official line is. I mean... Yeah. John posted, and we can include a link to that post, he posted what he feels is after happening. But as far as I know, you know, the government has not made any official statement on the matter. So I don't know. It's kind of worrisome, though, at the same time. I mean, you know, that they would... You know, they would stop sharing content like that. It's worrying.
It's worrying from the point of view of democracy, and it's worrying from the point of view that, you know, why turn this off? And when this was, you know, if you are deploying something new, why not continue to provide whatever feed or whatever XML format that John's site was using? Why not continue to provide that? At least in parallel, John has raised a couple of points in that post. He said the Oireachtas head of communications has stated unconvincingly that Kildare Street may not have, this is KildareStreet.com, quote, may not have the software to capture our content from our new debates site. And John's response is, since there is no longer any XML data feed or any other data feed to capture, we challenge him to cite whatever magical software he imagines can capture a vacuum. So there was obviously data, structured data being provided, and now it seems it's unstructured and will have to be somehow scraped. Is that the idea?
Well, that's it. I mean, you know, it sounds like, you know, they turned it off, which is ridiculous. But I mean, you know, I follow politics as much as anybody else does. I mean, I'm not a total addict, and I kind of follow stuff to as best I can. But for me, what I found useful about Kildare Street was that I could set up keyword alerts for certain topics.
Yeah.
Certain themes, certain things that I could, you know, so as soon as that mention was published, I get an email alert. I go, oh, okay, cool. You know, that's what's going on with that topic. Perfect. Now I know what's going on. And I'd be able to read what was actually said in the Dáil as opposed to what somebody's interpreted as being
yeah.
said.
Yeah.
And it sounds like, you know, that entire open data is dead. It's gone.
Yeah.
Anyway, Colm, we've rabbited on quite a lot. I think we need to call it a night.
Yeah, this is going to be one of the longer shows. Apologies if you've been waiting for, what is it, you wait for 3 weeks for an episode of technology.ie, and then we go on and on for about an hour and a half, even more, in fact. But it's all good stuff. Michele, thanks for joining us this week. We'll hopefully, you're around next week?
I think so.
All right, well, we'll hopefully do it again next week. And from myself, Conor Mwinachon.
And myself, Michele Nalan.
Until next week, slán go fóill.